Good evening, I'm Devin, and thank you for joining us for episode 2 of The Freedom Report.
And this is Jonathan, and on tonight's episode, as promised, we will begin our deep dive into Donald Trump's Agenda 47. But before we begin to plumb the depths of Trump's various promises, musings, and falsehoods, we wanted to take a moment to address the flurry of staff appointments that Donald Trump announced over the course of this past week.
Indeed, Donald Trump repeatedly made headlines last week with several controversial cabinet appointees, from the weekend host of Fox and Friends, Pete Hegseth, as defense secretary, to staunch anti-vaxxer and conspiracy theorist Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as Secretary of Health and Human Services. Trump's nominations have ranged from positively perplexing to downright dangerous.
That's right, and as we believe, it is very important to know more about those who Donald Trump seeks to surround himself with. We'll also be bringing bonus episodes as we can, focusing on each pick's background, credentials, or lack thereof, and any other pertinent information we uncover until we are better acquainted with Trump's would-be inner circle.
But for now, settle in and join us as we begin our journey into Donald Trump's Agenda 47. Agenda 47 is a series of 45 videos that the Trump campaign released on their website over the course of a year, beginning on December 15th, 2022, and concluding on December 22nd, 2023.
This evening, we will be focusing on the first of these videos, entitled Donald Trump's Free Speech Policy Initiative. Donald begins this video with his usual brand of sensational propaganda, claiming that America's right to free speech has been taken away by a left-wing censorship regime.
Before delivering his five-point plan for reclaiming the free speech of the American people, Donald claims that bombshell reports surfaced in late November or early December of 2022, confirming that a, quote, sinister group of deep state bureaucrats, Silicon Valley tyrants, left-wing activists, and depraved corporate news media have been conspiring to manipulate and silence the American people. They have collaborated to suppress vital information on everything from elections to public health. End quote.
As we were unable to locate any sources on Donald Trump's campaign website, we cannot say with certainty exactly what report Trump is referring to here. As we previously stated, this video was published on December 15th of 2022, and the report that we managed to locate that matches Donald's incendiary description is one published by the House of Representatives, Republican-led Committee on the Judiciary, and the Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government, published on 26 June 2023, over 7 months after Trump's revelation.
The several claims of government overreach and wrongdoing of various government agencies mentioned throughout the 37-page report are unsurprising when one considers that 8 of the 12 Republican members of the subcommittee, including the committee chair, Jim Jordan, voted against certifying the 2020 election. Several members have also expressed public support for Donald Trump, such as Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, Representative Elise Stefanik, who has since been named Trump's nominee for UN Ambassador, and Matt Gaetz, Trump's pick for Attorney General.
In August of 2023, Kate Starbird, Associate Professor at the University of Washington and former member of the Subcommittee for Misinformation, Disinformation, and Malinformation, wrote on the report saying, "The committee's interim report mischaracterizes the work of a voluntary advisory committee, conflates timelines, and selectively presents and recontextualizes content from emails and meeting notes provided to the committee to weave a false narrative." Imagine that, folks.
Donald Trump's influence can be seen in the language that is used throughout the report, and certainly left me with a sense that this was a partisan effort to justify Donald's penchant for near-pathological levels of lying. One of the most troubling passages comes from page 4 of the document, saying, and I quote, "Labeling speech misinformation does not strip it of its First Amendment protection. That is, so even if the speech is untrue, as some false statements are inevitable, if there is to be an open and vigorous expression of views in the public and private conversation, in refusing to carve out a First Amendment exception for false speech, the framers of our Constitution recognized the significant danger in making the government the ultimate arbiter of truth. The First Amendment also protects the right to receive information, an inherent corollary of the rights to free speech and press that are explicitly guaranteed by the Constitution, because the right to receive ideas follows ineluctably from the sender's First Amendment right to send them."
Of course, when you hear this spelled out so eloquently, it reminded me, as you were talking, Devin, of a quote from President Bartlet in The West Wing, when he was talking about two politicians having an argument, and one of them stands up and says to the other, "You're lying," and the other one answers, "Yes, I am, but hear me out." And that's because, of course that's how we all talk. You know, this says in there, it spells out that in our conversations with one another, it's inevitable that we're going to be, from time to time, just telling lies. And I disagree with that. I think that most people, when they're having conversations, are pretty honest with one another, and I don't see why we would set out to deceive one another on a regular basis, as this seems to imply.
Right. I feel like, as you're saying, of course, from time to time, people are going to lie, and there are those who lie more than others, Donald Trump being a great example, and really the entire Republican Party at this juncture. But, like you said, I don't think that a majority of people set out to just have false conversations with everyone they meet. I think the overarching message of this that I took away that's troubling to me is that it's almost as if they're trying to set up a structure in which the Republican Party and specifically Donald Trump don't have to be held accountable for the falsehoods that they spread. And, you know, this report and Donald Trump's video stating that this is what his goals were came out before the 2024 election cycle and before Donald Trump and his running mate made the false claims that resulted in a community in Springfield, Ohio, having to close down a majority of their government buildings because they were receiving so many bomb threats.
Yes, because as we all now know, they're eating the pets.
They're eating the dogs and the cats. They are eating the pets. Yes, I believe that's a direct quote from Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's true. And when this becomes the acceptable, or these become the acceptable parameters for discourse in our country, you know, we're in trouble. We're in big trouble. We have to, it just feels like here, based on what I'm reading from this, and what I'm hearing from Trump and his minions on this subject, is they want to be free to lie with impunity.
Right. And I think, too, you know, people already have such a distrust of mainstream media. I think Donald Trump began sowing that in 2016 when he was running against Hillary Clinton, and it took. For a lot of his supporters, they do not trust any mainstream
really,
media.
It goes back even further to the Tea Party movement that started in 2010, because it was very ambiguous at the time. I remember very clearly feeling kind of good about the Tea Party movement at first, because it seemed like people were starting to rise up and demand that the government become more accountable and more transparent, and that it became more responsive to the needs of everyday Americans instead of just big corporations. And then I started seeing tricorner hats, knee breeches, and wigs, and Confederate flags, and it just got more and more bizarre from there.
Oh yeah, and don't tread on me.
Yeah, that flag's ruined forever.
Yeah, they definitely knew how to ruin a flag. But this report, and I did do my best to read over this report, and it is very convoluted, or felt very convoluted to me. And, you know, it does attack several government agencies, saying that they participated in censorship of the American people. The main organizations that it attacks are CISA, which is a cybersecurity and infrastructure security agency, which is part of the Department of Homeland Security. It attacks the MDM subcommittee, which is the Misinformation, Disinformation, and Malinformation subcommittee, which was formed of three experts. Dr. Starbird was on that, was one of those experts. And then the CIS, which is the Center for Internet Security, which is a nonprofit agency that works with government agency to help protect government infrastructure on the internet, among other things.
And, you know, looking at these, you see the CISA, this is tasked with protecting the integrity of the information system, if you will, for the country. We cannot have a stable government if the information that the people are receiving is false. There's no way to truly quantify the value of the work that is done by this particular branch. When he talks about these branches, you know, shutting the American people down and their free speech. When Donald Trump says the American people, he's not talking about you and me. He's talking about his supporters. He's talking about people wearing American flags and American flag bathing suits and, you know, shrieking their adoration for him at his rallies. You know, these are the American...
And MAGA hats.
And MAGA hats. Of course, let us not forget the ubiquitous red hats.
And also the Russian citizens who were tasked with presenting false information, which has been proven in the 2016 election, at least. And I would argue to say that there was some or more.
Well, we know there was Russian interference in this election, but it turned out not to be necessary. The campaign to turn the people against the truth, basically, is what this is. It has been successful. What remains to be seen, and we'll certainly see it in the coming months, is what is the reaction of just regular people to things falling apart. And we have to support the efforts of organizations like these kind of as a patriotic activity, because these are dark days that we're facing, and there is so much at stake, and there's so many bad players out there that we do have to protect the integrity of our information systems. And if we don't, then things are just going to get worse. We have been, I think, entirely to use, for lack of a better term, too liberal with our what's the word I'm looking for here?
Application?
Our application of these rules, because Donald Trump should have been held to task long ago just for what he says on TV. Never mind what his minions put out there. You know, the minions being the people we don't see, you know, behind the scenes. But he should have been sued by the federal government for attempting to undermine the stability of our nation, and not just for January 6th. That's just the worst, you know, physical in front of your face action that he took. But he's everything he's done since then has weakened our nation. It's turned us against one another. It's red state, blue state, MAGA versus snowflakes, and all of these horrible things that we call, you know, people who have a progressive way of looking at things. You know, open-minded people who are compassionate. You know, there's no room for compassion in the Republican, or as I just say now, just call them fascists. It's what they are. These controls over speech. This is something that is kind of objective one historically for fascist regimes of the 20th century. They wanted to get control of the media and get control of, you know, the predecessors to social media platforms out there. And he's made it his first objective, unsurprisingly, to go after not only the media, but those government mechanisms that keep the media trustworthy.
I do think, too, it's important to note that in this report, they do say that the CISA committed government overreach by sourcing an outside organization in the CIS, which is the nonprofit organization that was attempting to, that helps attempt to protect, you know, the internet and keep information and whatnot factual. There was also another organization that was created during this time, a subsection of the CIS, which is the EIASAC, which is the Election Infrastructure Information Sharing and Analysis Center. And they were tasked with, they were basically a resource of election offices that they could reach out to help them protect against misinformation during the election cycles. And
we have to be vigilant with it. We have to help out. You know, we have to do our parts to help these organizations to be successful. When you hear a friend say something you know is completely wrong, you have to call their hand on it. I did it with my family and with friends as well. You know, when they talked about FEMA refusing to assist Republican counties. And somehow the Democrats have the ability to control the weather and target Republican counties and Republican areas of states with hurricanes and tornadoes and whatnot. I mean, you can't get more ridiculous than this. Not really. This, it's like saying we have magical powers that we use for evil.
Right.
And, you know, why in the world anyone believes any of that, I'll never understand.
But the one, you know, the thing, as I was saying, they're attempting to discredit this and say that this was government overreach because it wasn't clearly defined in the CIS's operation standards to protect election security or election infrastructure security. They were tasked with protecting information technology and telecommunication security, so transit, aviation, maritime, ground and surface communications, as well as emergency services and postal and shipping. But in 2017, before Trump took office, because of the rhetoric in the 2016 campaign, Obama's DHS Secretary Johnson broadened the definition of their powers and included election infrastructure as a critical infrastructure subsector. So this whole show about this being government overreach, I personally don't see it. But again, you know, I don't run around saying that people are eating dogs and cats.
Right. You know, and it's a specific type of people in a specific place are doing this. It's disturbing that during the campaign, he targeted specific communities around the country and specific groups within those communities, like the Venezuelans in Aurora, Colorado, which we have since learned Aurora, Colorado is definitely a place where a lot of immigrants go. I believe it's over 100 languages are spoken in their community, so it's not just Venezuelans, but many, many others who live there. But We see this also with dictatorial or fascist regimes. You start picking off the most vulnerable. And pretty much in every situation, the most vulnerable in your society are your immigrants, your migrants, or whatever term you want to use, because their rights are the most uncertain of any group in your country. So it starts there. But these organizations that were created to keep, if you will, to keep the internet honest, they're there to prevent this style of speech. Right. It's not free speech. Donald wants to call it free speech, but it's not. You know, inciting people against others is expressly forbidden in relation to our First Amendment rights. We can't do that.
Right. It's like yelling, you know, fire in a crowded theater. I think that's a common adage that gets brought up a lot when this conversation is had. But just the fact that we're trying to redefine that false information can genuinely be presented with no consequence is just beyond me. And I just, yeah, there's just no words. But as we said, Donald Trump does have a 5-point plan to reclaim America's free speech, the first of which is his promise, quote unquote, within an hour or hours of his inauguration, he will sign an executive order banning federal departments or agencies from, quote unquote, colluding with any organization to limit, categorize, or impede the lawful speech of American citizens.
And this is one thing that we see commonly with Donald Trump, and you also see in other authoritarian regimes as they're rising up, is persistent noise. You create a cacophony of just racket. It's to the point where no one wants to hear any of it anymore, and the people just shut down. And we're kind of there.
Yeah, I think we saw that after the election. You were the one who told me that a lot of the news organizations, the legitimate news organizations like MSNBC and CBS and ABC, had seen a huge decline in their viewership after the election. And I think people are just burnt out with it.
They're tired of it, and they're sick of it, and this is exactly what Donald Trump wants.
Yeah, because he doesn't want them to be paying attention to what he's doing.
Right.
And pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Right. An engaged public is a sign of a healthy democracy. And for years, the people have been becoming less and less engaged. And this has kind of taken it over the top. People are just sick of it. They're tired of the arguments with friends. You know, you have to look from the perspective, and this is hard for me, but kind of step in the shoes of your average Trump voter. You know, maybe they watch Fox. Maybe they watch America One. Maybe they watch Newsmax. Just a few minutes, just enough to kind of get fed whatever it is they're supposed to believe today. And they don't look at it that way. But, you know, they're not saying, okay, go ahead and feed me my daily portion. That's not what I'm saying. But they are, in effect, that's what they're doing. You know, they just listen to just enough from people who agree with them, who will tell them what they want to hear, instead of just the truth.
Right. They'd like to be in an echo chamber where their opinions aren't challenged. And as you mentioned before, I think that's something that our country's lost, and it's a shame, is the ability to have a discourse about policy without, like, ripping each other's heads off.
Mm-hmm. And we can't just have, with people like Donald Trump at the forefront, he's the standard bearer for the Republican Party, or whatever you want to call it, the Trumpist Party, or, you know, this, I don't know, this thing that it is now, but he's the standard bearer. So anyone who's part of that, they're kind of looking to him as a role model, either directly or indirectly, and he influences the way they engage with their neighbors who are either uncertain of what they believe or on the opposite side. And Donald doesn't like being opposed.
No.
He likes to sit on high and give directives to people and to be obeyed. That's what he wants. You know, inevitably, he wants to be obeyed. He wants to be glorified. He wants to be showered with affection and
praise.
And praise. And that's been adoration. And right, he's an egomaniac, and the thing is, he's getting that more and more. If you look at the news today, do you hear really any Republicans who are currently in office and will be in office in the next Congress, do you hear them challenging him?
Right. There's very few people, and there's all this speculation about who's going to be the person to challenge all these crazy nominees that Trump has put up, and not crazy in a sense that they are, you know, crazy, but crazy in a sense is that they have no credentials. They have scandal after scandal behind their name.
Each one wildly inappropriate for the office that he has nominated them for. And it was kind of this way before, but it's even more egregious now. Because to vote yes on any of these individuals is going to be a mark, a stain on anyone's record.
Yeah.
Because you have individuals like the Fox and Friends Weekend host who's been nominated to head the Department of Defense.
Pete Hegseth.
Whose military experience as far as this kind of leadership is the equivalent of the joke made about Sarah Palin that she would be great with foreign policy because she could see Russia from her front porch.
Right. He was I believe, a junior officer, which again, thank you for your service, but you're going to be leading the Department of Defense, and you were a junior officer in the Minnesota State National Guard.
Yes.
Now, he did do two tours in Iraq, but again, junior officer.
But there's a difference between taking orders and giving orders.
Yeah,
and
they said, 3 billion people would be
3 million. 3 million. 3 million employees and nearly a $1 trillion budget.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to do so much more than, you know, just rail against what's wrong with everything. You've got to be able to make it work.
And you have to be capable of making command decisions.
And exactly. And that's not just, it doesn't stop there. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is, if you just listen to him for a little while, off in La La Land.
It's very hard to listen to him, I will give you that.
His voice does sound, it sounds terrible, it's hard to listen to him, poor thing, I feel bad for him there, but his views on vaccines and on fluoride in our water and processed foods and what people should be eating and what should be allowed for people who are on SNAP and what shouldn't be, they're bizarre. And he's a conspiracy theorist. He's in the midst of all this.
He is not a doctor. He
has no experience. He wasn't like a hospital administrator at some point in his career, or a dietitian, or any of this.
He was a lawyer.
He's a lawyer who specialized in environmental law, I believe.
Yes, it was environmental law.
And the only reason he has any notoriety is because his name is Kennedy.
Right. And now, because he admitted that he had a worm in his brain. And also the several carcasses that he toted around and left all over New York. But we
talk about these things because we want to get to the next point here. And that's where he's going to identify and fire every federal employee who engages in domestic censorship directly or indirectly. So these individuals that he's putting into these positions, they're going to be completely and wholly dependent on Donald Trump for the positions they hold. So are they going to challenge him in any way?
Right, and if he should succeed in getting confirmed by the Senate, Matt Gaetz will be the one that is in charge of the Department of Justice, and he will absolutely do whatever it is that Trump wants.
And that's frightening because, well, for so many reasons, but attorneys general have the ability to prosecute anyone at any time. Or to stop that sort of thing. His previous attorney general, I think his name was Robert Barr. I know Barr for sure, but I can't... William Barr, maybe. I'll have to look at that. But it was Barr. Refused him from time to time because he believed that Donald was going too far. You want... A good leader wants to surround himself or herself with individuals who will challenge them to be better. who call their hand and say, look, you're going too far. This isn't what you promised. You need people like that around you, and you want people like that around you.
Like during his first administration when he was challenged because he was not going to send aid, disaster aid, to California because those weren't people who voted for him.
And his aides had to pull up a map of Orange County. And of course, if you knew anything about Orange County, you know it's a Republican stronghold in California. And once they finally pointed out that these folks voted for him, he was like, okay, well, we can help them. Well, see, we already know these things happened. And this is what's coming our way soon. And when he makes these changes aren't going to be for what, like we had said before in the episode, they're not going to be to make sure that political discourse in this country is more honest.
No.
This is going to make it so that he can control the content of what's out there. This is going to give him more strength. They're going to be going through, we're going to have people going through Facebook posts, X, who even look, I don't even know why people look at that anymore. But it's just one person's opinions now.
Right.
But it's his little toy. Or one of them. But the point I'm making is this is going to give him the ability to control
the narrative,
at large. The narrative for the people of this country, and we've got to do what we can to challenge this. And part of it is going to be, first of all, doing what we're doing right now. You know, this podcast, when Devin and I first started talking about doing this, one of the things I brought up was the salon culture that existed in France before the revolution, where people got together in the salon, the nice rooms in their houses, like a parlor, and they would talk about the issues of the day. And what began as simply people getting together talking about the issues of the day became, eventually, the French Revolution, and changed very much Western civilization.
Right.
We went from a bunch of absolute monarchies and religious theocracies to, you know, the Western world that we recognize today. And this is what led to that. People having these conversations with one another, and I look forward to hearing from you, Devin does too, about what you think about some of the things we're saying. But having these conversations, and then eventually taking action. I'm not calling for, I'm not inciting to riot here, but I do think that protests that are licensed and legal. Running for office. We have elections every year. You know, not just every 4 years. But we're hoping that as we reveal these plans to you, some of which are, it's going to be too late to do anything about, at least at first. But, you know, with this Project 2025, I believe, I've talked to Devin about it, I've talked to other friends about it. Working in the legal field as I did years ago, I believe that there are just stacks of executive orders that the Heritage Foundation has put together, you know, on pretty paper with calligraphy, ready for his ugly Sharpie signature in those pretty blue leather binders with the gold and everything. They're just in a box, they're in banker's boxes, stacked up, ready for day one. And it's just going to be a flurry of Sharpie squeaking on parchment and then smile for the camera as one by one he puts these things into place. And I don't know, honestly, what effect this is going to have on podcasts like ours, who, I mean, we certainly oppose him and the regime that he's bringing in. And I use that word intentionally. You know, regime. This is not an administration that's coming in. This is a regime.
Right, and he's made his plans for going forward very clear.
Yes, and of course we use this term regime, it goes back to the Ancien Régime, which is what they called the old order in France before the revolution. And this, we're going back with Trump to something that for American society, and I would say more broadly for the English speaking people, something that hasn't been common to our society since the reign of Henry VIII.
Right. And I do think something that points to your assertion that there's just stacks and stacks of these executive orders that have been crafted for him that are ready for him to sign is how many of these videos we've just skimmed through them. And obviously we're just now talking about the first one. And in the first one, as with so many of them, he says on the first day or within hours of being inaugurated, that's I will right. do this, this, and this. And I think that that points to what you're saying. They learned from the first administration when he accomplished very little, and the people that seek to use him learned, and they are prepared this time. They know what and they are doing.
Exactly. You have to move quickly and move faster than the speed of litigation. That's all we have left as the opposition are the few remaining judges out there who will be willing to challenge him. Appointed by Presidents Clinton, W., and Obama, and Biden. And that's
if he doesn't come up with a way to unseat them.
Right. And we're facing the fact that no matter what these judges do, at the end of the day, the crown jewel of our judiciary system, the Supreme Court, is his already.
Yeah.
It's completely...
We've seen that.
It is completely and totally his, to the point where the Chief Justice of our Supreme Court gave him immunity, gave him almost absolute power. As Justice Sotomayor said, you have made him a king above the law. And he went on further to say that with these official acts that he cannot be, which, by the way, he defines what's official, these official acts cannot be used against him as evidence in order to try him, which means we can't impeach him either. And if you can't impeach him, you can't try him.
And the only way to remove a sitting president who has gone past his
constitutional authority.
Right, his constitutional authority is the impeachment, and that's all, like Jonathan said, that is all but guaranteed to not happen because of the Supreme Court's ruling, his Supreme Court's ruling. Obviously, there are three justices that do oppose, but...
And any chance that the people's branch, the legislative branch, would step up and say, hang on, this is not about party. There's no chance of that. These people have proven time and again that they are willing to do anything, say anything, to get into his good graces.
And I believe some of them even said that they were willing or wanted to be a rubber stamp for whatever it was that he wanted.
I mean, you have Senator Lindsey Graham and Senator Ted Cruz and Senator Marco Rubio. These three have all said he's unfit, unworthy, that he's a liar.
Did his vice president. His vice president, J.D. Vance, in 2016 called him America's Hitler.
And now look at all of these folks. All of them.
Marco Rubio being the Secretary of State.
Going to be Secretary of State. This is a position that At one point in our nation's history, was just a hop, skip, and a jump from the presidency. Well, it still is, but you don't have anyone like Liz Cheney out there, or Adam Kinzinger, or some of these folks now who used to have a mind of their own. It's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, because I don't see how you can go from being viscerally opposed to someone to just being in love with them.
Right.
I mean, I could see maybe moderating your view and saying, well, they're not Hitler, but he's still kind of garbage. But I can't see going, well, he's not Hitler, he's Jesus, actually.
Right.
How do you do that?
Whiplash, sure.
The moral gymnastics there, I mean, did it hurt when you landed after that jump? I mean, wow. But all of this just... To take it back again and get us back to what we're talking about here specifically, is this all of this that we've been talking about is going to be silenced.
Right.
We're not going to hear, if there is a moment where one of these senators jumps up and says, this is wrong, we're not going to hear about it. It's not even going to be there. If he gets the kind of power over our digital discourse in this country, if he gets this kind of power, we will be silenced. We won't even know that anyone agrees with us except for these podcasts until they're taken down.
Right.
And then it's going to be just your neighbor and eventually people become too frightened to talk about it at all. And I've already ran into situations like this with friends who work in various capacities for the government, for example, two teacher friends of ours who are scared to give their political opinions publicly because in one of them's case, he's been told he would be fired unless it's praise for Donald Trump.
Yeah, and in the other case, they were told that it was strongly discouraged to display, I think, any political views or political views with liberal leanings or something of that nature. I forget exactly what they were told, but it was very similar. But all of this is to say...
The censorship that we're talking about here is not censoring the people's First Amendment rights to free speech. You know, cutting that out. He wants the opposition to him silenced.
Right. Which brings in the second of one of his five points, which is that he will order the DOJ to investigate all parties that are involved in the quote-unquote new online censorship regime. And I would venture to say that he will extend this to the news media as well, because the other points get into mis and disinformation and malinformation, and I think that the news media is very quick to call out his untruths or his lies. They're very quick to call out however they classify them. They're very quick to call them out, at least on the liberal news media.
And I think that they'll be attacked. And Devin and I aren't afraid to use the word lie.
No.
He is a liar. He tells lies. That's what a liar is. It is a person who tells lies.
Right.
And I'm tired of misinformation, disinformation, malinformation. Let's just call it lies. You know, on our show, when we talk to you and it's our words and we're not quoting, it will be lies.
Right. So, not, we won't be telling lies.
It will not be us telling the lies, but what we will be saying is we will use the word lies to describe this misinformation, disinformation, these are called lies.
Right, and technically malinformation is truth out of context, but still, it's truth out of context.
Under the category of the sin of omission, really.
Right. It is where you don't give adequate substance of an argument or article or whatever you're describing in order to construe the meaning or purpose behind the information. But he also, in his third point, he goes into how he will have Congress draw up a bill for him to pass that will revise Section 230. Section 230 is a part of the Communication Decency Act of 1996. And what this does is protects online platforms. It gives them immunity for people being able to sue them for what someone else says on their forum. So if someone says something libelous or just straight up untrue, they can't be sued for it.
Like the comments section below a news story that you read on CBS News.
Right.
So if I were to post on there something that's completely untrue, CBS News is not going to be held liable for what I posted in the comments section.
Right. And it also extends another protection, which is the Good Samaritan protection, allowing the platform to moderate its content. And if they make a good faith determination, or they can make a good faith determination without losing their immunity, and they can say that something is obscene, lewd, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or otherwise objectionable, untrue, whatnot, they can remove that and still be protected. And Donald Trump specifically states in this video, quote-unquote, from now on, digital platforms should only qualify for immunity protection under Section 230 if they meet high standards of neutrality, transparency, fairness, and non-discrimination. And I think we all know what amounts to neutrality in Donald Trump's book, as well as fairness and non-discrimination. He's not talking about discriminating against people based on their gender, color, sexual orientation. No, he's talking about discriminating against people for presenting false information, because that's what he does.
And discriminating against Donald Trump specifically because, you know, he was removed from some platforms, or his
Twitter, before Elon Musk took over, and he actually is still angry about that because he mentions it in this video. Funny that you should mention that, because he says that people should be notified if they're being removed by the platform.
So, as you can see here, I mean, in truth, this is a pet project. This is something that, it's not a wide-reaching policy initiative that he's put a lot of thought into. What this is I'm mad, I was mistreated in my view, and I'm going to get you back. So I'm going to get my guys over here to make this sound better, but really it's just about me getting you back.
Right, and that is so apparent. It's in the fifth point that he makes when he says that, quote-unquote, furthermore, when users of big online platforms have their content or accounts removed, throttled, shadow banned, or otherwise restricted, no matter what name they use, they should have the right to be informed it's happening, the right to specific explanation of the reason why, and the right to a timely appeal. So he is clearly still hurting over the fact that he was banned from Twitter, and rightfully so, since he was spouting so many lies. We'll circle back to that. The fourth point that he makes is that we need to break up the entire toxic censorship industry. And again, I think this is his way of lumping all overarchingly liberal things into one thing. He includes universities in this because universities were brought in with the CIS. Some of the people that work with the CIS work with universities. Dr.
Starbird,
she is an associate professor at Washington University, runs a program for an informed public. So it's clear that that is targeted at what was happening with the CISA and the CIS and those organizations that were the subject of the hearing of the subcommittee.
And I mean, it just, you, we're talking about a lot of what we see in this Agenda 47 as we move forward after tonight to the next and the next and the next, is basically the one of his goals, the deconstruction of the administrative state.
Right, he wants sole control over everything.
Yes, everything directly to the White House, under his thumb, ran by his minions, who will do his bidding, and who will know his mind, and will know what their job is without him having to trouble himself to tell them. People talk about deconstructing the administrative state. We're talking about eliminating a lot of the things that make life better for average working people. But we'll get into that as we discuss some of these other items over the coming days, weeks, and eventually months.
Right. And the last thing, we already touched briefly on the fifth point that Donald Trump makes with the "I'm still mad that my Twitter got banned" section of the video. The other point that he makes is, and again, direct quote, "the time has finally come for Congress to pass a digital bill of rights." And he basically says that this digital bill of rights would include the right to digital due process, which in his mind means that the government officials would need a court order to take down online content. So you're looking at a brand new landscape of the internet where you can say completely infactual information and somebody will have to take you to court to get it removed from the internet. And that just would be chaos.
And we all know one thing that Donald Trump enjoys, and that is lawsuits.
No, Trump loves a lawsuit. How many did he have going into the election cycle?
At one point, it was around 200, and I know that it exceeded that number, and that was before Election Day. And as we all have seen, of course, he got what he wanted on Election Day, so they've all stopped, or most of them have.
They've just gone away.
And, you know, it's amazing how the election was unfair and it was rigged against him, even though he was the sitting president who lost. And then the opposition is in power and he wins, and no comment.
Right. There was lots of lead up. It was funny. There was lots of lead up on election night. He himself was tweeting out how there was evidence of cheating in Pennsylvania, and towards midnight, 1 o'clock, when it started to look favorable to him, it just was silenced. There was no talk of it anymore.
And by 3 o'clock, when Wisconsin fell to him, that was kind of it. You know, we've heard very little about
how there was widespread cheating.
it's amazing how the cheating only happened when he was the guy in charge. You know, I've always thought that was interesting. It's like, you're the sitting president. If anyone could do anything, it was you.
Right. If anyone's doing the cheating here, it's you, sir. But I think this being the first video that was posted, obviously this is a very important issue to Donald Trump. This was a very important issue going into this election cycle for Donald Trump, because again, he and his running mate participated and many of his of the campaign surrogates participated in lying about the country for Donald Trump. He himself was lying all over the country.
Can we say Rudy Giuliani? What a sad story. Deservedly so, but wow, from America's mayor to America's biggest train wreck.
Right. The depths that he was willing to go to please Donald Trump, and how did it work out for him? But I think, again, this is representative of what Donald Trump's about what Agenda 47 is going to be about. But it's definitely something that we will continue to delve into in our future episodes. Again, we will do our best to have bonus episodes up very soon discussing as many of the appointments that we can fit into a single episode that he's made, talking about their backgrounds, their credentials, any scandals that they may be involved in, because there are...
Matt Gaetz, we're talking about you.
Matt Gaetz and Pete Hegseth as of today.
Oh, yes, definitely.
It came out as of today that there was some scandal surrounding him as well.
A certain 17-year-old girl.
Right. So, you know, it seems to be and not to make light of the situation at all, it's disgusting and abhorrent, but, you know, that between Matt Gaetz and Pete Hegseth, it's beginning to look like, and Donald Trump himself, it's beginning to look like that's a requirement to work in his regime. But that is something that we will delve into, and again, next time on our regular episode, on next Monday, we will be back into Agenda 47 to discuss what is the next video that Donald Trump and what he has to say is his goal. So
it's his next gripe.
Yeah, his next gripe. His next thing that he was just angry about since he lost in 2020. But we certainly appreciate you joining us. We hope that this episode has given you some clarity or some sense that you're not alone out there, that there are people who kind of see the craziness and want to stand as a bulwark against it. So we're hoping that you're enjoying yourself, and we will look forward to bringing our next episode to you.
And with that, good night.
And thank you for listening to The Freedom Report.